Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome to the Geek Legacy Podcast. We talk about everything in the realm of entertainment news. I'm Justin Cavanaugh. With me, as always, is Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How are you doing today?
Lovely and happy to be with you, boys.
All right. Speaking of boys, we also have David Edmondson. How are you doing today, Dave?
I'm doing amazing because all these people griped that the pandemic was going to kill the movie-going experience and people are going to watch movies at home, and Marvel did a good job of showing you, don't worry, movies are coming back to the theaters, and I cannot wait to talk about that. How are you today, Justin?
I'm fabulous. No complaints. I got to spend a wonderful day with friends, and it was awesome. We were working, but not really. it was fun. I had a good time, as it were.
Just because our work is fun doesn't mean it's not work.
That's true. It's exhausting. It's hard having fun all day, every day.
I do hear it's hard out there for a pimp.
It is.
3-6 Mafia, they knew what was up.
I mean, they wanted an Oscar for it. So
it's an Academy Award winning 3-6 Mafia.
Sure. I saw that movie at the AMC 20 in Fullerton on the left side, the non-stadium side for all you local folk.
The old zoo.
Yeah, that was a buzzkill. I always hated it when I saw that it was on that side. I'm like, damn it.
You're like, oh man, 1 through 6, 1 through 10.
That's the one that's got the sticky floor.
Buzzkill.
It's like 8 miles long because it's not stadium seating.
Yeah, I would love to go back there. You know, the first movie I ever saw there was The Mummy in 1999.
Oh.
I'll always have
talking the language.
Yeah, so. Which is funny because earlier today we were talking about a movie and I don't remember what it was, but I also saw that. Oh, Big Daddy. That's what it was. Saw that. Hope she's doing fine. And no longer stalking folk. Because that's bad. Anyway.
And it's bad.
Somebody just got called out publicly.
Yeah sorry about that. Maybe stalking's the wrong word, but passionately seeking late night trysts and following.
Yeah. Passionately watching from a distance unnoticed.
Yeah, there we go. That's better. That's better on the court papers, I suppose. Mm. Anyway, why bury the lead, as they say? David, you mentioned Marvel and the motion picture shows and how we're all going back to the cinema. And it's quite possible we could be doing that as early as July 7th, when Black Widow will finally be released a whole year later than it was supposed to. Maybe, I don't know, 14 months later. I don't remember anymore, but we got a ton of movie announcements and new dates, and Marvel Phase 4 is here. It's upon us, and it is quite a lot of motion picture shows. I'm looking at, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 movies between now and May 5th of 2023. You guys go down the list? Shall we do that?
Is that counting the final little title card at the end that they didn't give us a date for?
It is not, because there's no date on that one.
All right.
So I skipped over that one, but we can touch on it in a second. But yes, Black Widow is kicking things off with July 7th, 2021. I'm looking forward to this one. Black Widow is one of my favorite Avengers, which was never the case until the first Avenger movie. But whatever, she's badass in Iron Man 2. Probably my favorite part of Iron Man 2, I would say. I'm excited. I'm ready for this. What about you guys? Where do you stand, Randy, on Black Widow?
I've been looking forward to this since it was first announced years ago, and it's been pushed back mercilessly. Wasn't it originally supposed to be part of Phase 3?
May 2020.
Or am I wrong on that? Yeah.
It was always supposed to be.
It was the first post Endgame. Yeah.
Not Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because that's a fair film.
Fair enough. I've been looking forward to it ever since back then, and I'm definitely willing to brave the wild of going back into the theater to get me some.
Yeah. What about you, Dave?
I was always secretly hoping that David Harbour's character was going to be Omega Red. You know, eventually I'll be right, and Omega Red will show up in something Marvel, just because he's such an insane comic book character. I think He may be difficult to pull off on screen, but I would love to see him show up. And since this is, you know, heavily Russia focused, it would be fun. But yeah, I'm down for Black Widow. I think she of the pair of her and Hawkeye, I find her more interesting as, you know, just these normal people who are like toe to toe with like literal gods, and just why they're important, and why they even need them in this team. And you find reasons why in these Avengers films. And of course, spoiler alert, you know, Miss Romanoff is no longer amongst the living. So it'll be interesting to see how audiences react to seeing her, you know, post death. Like I think the second time I watched Endgame, it hit me a lot harder that, you know, like when she says, "See you in a minute," I'm like, "Oh my God, you won't." And, it'll be interesting to see, you know, her appear on screen and just to see how we react, or, you know, I'm also curious if they're gonna try to tie anything else in together. You know, Marvel loves to, you know, have everything be interconnected, but since this is going to be a prequel and we know what happens to Miss Romanoff, I'll be curious to see if there's something it can set up or if it can somehow, you know, tie to something else in the MCU. So I am excited all the way around.
Sure. I'm excited to get back to post-credit stingers. Those are always like my favorite part of the movie going experience. Doesn't matter what it is. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch the credits and see if there's something at the end. Right. You never know. Howard the Duck might show up again.
And you get so sad when it doesn't.
I know. You're like, shit, man, you owe me like 10 minutes of my life back.
I watched all this below-the-line talent bullshit, and you're not even going to give me credits?
Yeah, I like to see fun names just like stand out. It's always neat when there's just like a rhyming name in there, or a name that maybe you've never even seen before, like Bodacious Barry or something. You're like, whoa, who's that guy? What does he do? Oh, he's the assistant too.
I like to look for the two things. One is I try to find the most like just random obscure job, and it's always like assistant to the assistant to the assistant to Mr. Holland or something like that.
Right.
And I love waiting for the production babies. Disney does a really good job in their credits. They usually will post like all the babies that were born while making this movie from their cast and their crew and stuff like that. So usually it's fun. Sometimes it's like two, and then sometimes it's like 80.
Yeah.
Well, especially when they got, you know, those big, huge crews.
Yeah.
People be fucking.
They do. Yeah.
And there's like a second unit and a third unit and like a 14th unit. And then there's like the Australian people and the Georgia people. And 20 minutes later, the credits are over. Like, oh my God.
Literally just a harem.
Yeah, exactly. So moving right along, we have Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Ooh.
That is September 3rd, 2021. And the toys are popping up for this movie already. I've been seeing them all over the Targets and the Wally Worlds whilst venturing through these retailers. And they're pretty cool. They're Marvel Legends figures, but, you know, take it. Kind of neat.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously I think they're trying to capture the lightning of Black Panther. You know, Black Panther does such a great job of, you know, giving representation to such an underrepresented, you know, portion of society. You know, it looks like they're trying to do the same thing, and I think it's great, you know, what they're trying to pull off. I think it'll be fun to see, you know, the real Mandalorian, the real Mandarin. You know, I love Trevor from Iron Man 3. I think that the reveal that the Mandarin, I can't want to say Mandalorian, the Mandarin is just this like jokey, like British guy, I think is so hysterical. But, you know, obviously it looks like they're going to have an actual Mandarin. Man, I don't know what my thing is tonight, but so yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited. The person who's playing Shang-Chi, he's from Kim's Convenience, and I'm here for him. I think he is fantastic, and he looks like someone who could kick my ass. So if he's gonna be kicking ass in this movie, I think that'll be fine. And Awkwafina is always a delight. Sure. She's one of those people like you would think I'd get irritated. You get irritated with, and you get tired of, kind of like a Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, Ghostbusters 2016. Like, you think you get tired of them, but they just constantly make you smile.
That is true. I watch that movie more than any other human being, I think. It's always on my TV. I don't know why. But I enjoy it quite a bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are some legitimately hysterical parts in that movie. Like, when they're listening to, like, the recording of what they say is going to be the ghost, and it's a fart. And she's like, it's real funny. Is it funnier if I tell you it came from the front?
Yeah, that's gross.
She even leaned in. How funny is that?
Right. My goodness. Moving on. Eternals. Now, I know jack about this movie. This is November 5th, 2021. The third in the lineup. And I honestly, I don't know anything about Eternals. This is the one with Angelina Jolie in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this movie. So I'm excited. I want to kind of keep it that way. I want to keep it a mystery, as it were. And be pleasantly surprised when it is viewed in November.
Yeah, I think Eternals could go one of two ways, just because the nature of the group, you know, they're all just highly strong, you know, near immortal, like superpowered beings. And, you know, it could easily become like a, well, we already have the Avengers. You know, what's really going to separate them from it? But I think they have a really, really interesting cast. And, you know, I think the diversity and the talent level, you know, Salma Hayek's in it, Kit Harington's in it, you know, it'll be fun to see Kit Harington and Richard Madden, you know, Rob Stark and Jon Snow in the same film. You know, Kamal Nanjiani is, you know, he's hysterical.
So funny.
It looks like he got in like total like Chris Pratt crazy ripped shape to go from the funny guy to like the in shape guy. And yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. What about you, Randy? Are you excited for Eternals?
All I know of it is that like 10-second little bit that you saw in the Phase 4 trailer. So I don't really know anything other than, I mean, it looks interesting. So what I have discovered, though, because as we've talked a lot about the fact that I was experiencing a lot of Marvel fatigue when it was movie after movie in the theaters a couple years back, and it took being without that for over a year to, and then getting tantalized with these great Disney Plus series for me to kind of get my taste for Marvel back. So what that basically comes down to is I'll pretty much watch anything that they put out, just because I'm getting hooked all over again. I'm off the wagon, as they say.
And Eternals is interesting. It has one of the more, next to Black Widow, probably has the most altered release schedule. So, you know, filming began in fall of 2019 and was finished last year in 2020. It was set to come out November 2020, but was delayed for the coronavirus. First, it was going to be February 2021, and now it's November 2021. It was actually supposed to come out before Shang-Chi, but now it's coming out, obviously, after it. So it's interesting.
Yeah, they mixing things up a bit.
Yeah, because I mean they're also interconnected. I'm curious what effect it kind of has on other projects.
I don't want one position. I want all positions.
All of them. Yeah. At once. Kama Sutra.
Right. And then for Christmas, we have, this is December 17th, rather, we have Spider-Man 3 No Way Home. And this is the one with all the ridiculous casting rumors where everyone's in it. We even got Jamie Foxx supposedly in this movie, and I'm excited at the prospect of hearing Spider-Man one more time in my life.
I think he's confirmed. I'm pretty sure Jamie Foxx and Alfred Molina, I think, are both confirmed, and I think the only ones kind of up in the air that they haven't like fully confirmed yet are the actual other Spider-Men, you know, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. I think they're both heavily speculated that they'll be in it, but this movie's got to be just fucking crazy, just because how Far From Home ended, you know, with J. Jonah Jameson outing Spider-Man, and you know, with all of these multiversal people, you know, in the Spider-Verse. I think everyone on this podcast loves it. I really, really want to see, you know, how they're going to pull this just crazy idea off.
Yeah, me too. This is probably my most anticipated out of all the movies on this list so far. That could change at any moment, but that's definitely the one that I have the most stock in at the moment. Only because Black Widow is in Back to the Future sense, we know what happens to her. So I'm not really terribly invested. It'll be a fun story. But I think the worry factor is out the window because I know that it's going to be okay, kind of.
It's low stakes.
Yeah. So I'm like,
we know we're all going to get a fun kind of spy action movie out of it. But at the end of the day, you know, it is going to have very little impact. It's, you know, who knows? They may throw a curveball, but I don't see it having a ton of impact on the larger MCU.
Right. And I felt that way about Ant-Man and the Wasp. And then in that closing second there where it showed all of them just turn into the ash and Lang was stuck in the quantum realm. That's when it really hit me. I was like, yeah, it's just a fun movie. But then once they were snapped, I was like, fuck! Like, I forgot that that was even a thing. And it was neat to see it kind of catch up with itself. And that's that one little moment really helped me enjoy the movie even more, I think, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the Ant-Man franchise.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's my most anticipated of this list when we get there.
Oh, really? So then moving on, we have Thor, Love, and Thunder. Very excited. So that was those were my most excited ones for 2021. I guess I should rephrase.
I think you skipped Doctor Strange.
I'm sorry. So, yeah, let me back up. The most anticipated for the films coming out in 2021, I would say Spider-Man 3. Moving on to 2022, we have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is March 25th. That should be fun. Yay, everything always comes out on your birthday. What the fuck?
You mean that and Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice?
Well, yeah, and then I think Godzilla vs. Kong was going to at one point.
Right, but then they pushed it back.
Sure. I feel like every couple of years a big movie comes out on your birthday.
I just have one of those birthdays, I guess.
Yeah. And leap year ruins
Spider-Man,
it.
Spider-Man 2 came out on your birthday.
That is true. And there was a Spider-Man. Movie. There was a Spider-Man in the theater.
Nice.
An actual man dressed as a spider, and it was really cool.
Just for your birthday.
Yeah. It's like, I got you for 3 minutes. Yeah, I know, right?
I think it's exciting that Sam Raimi's going to direct the Doctor Strange sequel. And, you know, we're obviously going to bring in Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet Witch and stuff like that. And we know that Doctor Strange is going to come into the Spider-Man movie as kind of like a mentor for Peter. So I think this is going to heavily, you know, connect to that film. And I think, you know, we're going to... Doctor Strange is going to have to kind of deal with the actor effects of whatever's happening with the multiverse in the Spider-Man movie. And yeah, should be these almost will probably end up being like companion films. And that is a pretty good way to use Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was hard for me to buy into a Doctor Strange solo movie when it first came out. It did really, really well as an origin story solo movie. As far as the box office goes, it did great. But I mean, I just remember being like, I feel like I have to watch it more as homework as opposed to being genuinely interested in it. But I walked away pleasantly surprised. But he strikes me as more of an awesome support character as opposed to a standalone movie. But we shall see.
Yeah, I loved him in Infinity War. I think yeah, he's better great. In Infinity War than his own movie.
Right. That's cool. I mean, but he also had all of his powers and he's a badass and that helped. And even his appearance in Thor Ragnarok was great as well. So, moving right along, we have Thor Love and Thunder, which is May 6th, 2022. And, we're basically just a year away from that, which is absurd to think about. Like, the time of this recording, we are exactly 1 year away. And we have all these movies that we just mentioned and a Thor movie. That's a little absurd. That's crazy. But I'm also looking forward to this one as well. I love... Chris Hemsworth as Thor. I think he's so amazing. I love his comedic timing. And Taika Waititi is just so fucking funny and clever. And at this point, I will watch anything that the man does. I am quite fond of his work. Randy, Thor, Love and Thunder, where are you at?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a big Thor guy either, but Ragnarok kind of turned me around. And gotta love Taika Waititi, right? So, yeah, I'm on board. Like I said, I'm down for anything that Marvel throws our way right now. I'm just like that kid in front of the well with his mouth open, just waiting for some drips of water to come in.
This is my dream, my wish.
And Thor's really the only only original Avenger still kind of banging around in the MCU. You know, Hawkeye's gonna get his own TV show. Black Widow and Iron Man are both kind of dead. Right. I don't think we're ever going to get a Hulk standalone movie like anymore. I mean, Thor's really kind of representing that phase one crew, going in there. And I'm super excited to see Christian Bale enter the MCU. I'm hoping that Taika Waititi just brings that role out of him. there was a great interview with Taika Waititi talking about Thor Ragnarok, and someone asked, like, hey, you know, you put yourself in all your movies, was there a reason you chose to be this computer generated like rock monster? And he's like, if you watch Thor Ragnarok, everybody in the film wants something from Thor, whether that's, you know, for him to become the ruler of Asgard, if they want his hammer, if they want him dead, if they have, you know, everyone has like an ulterior motive with Thor, except for Korg. All Korg wants to do is be Thor's friend. And like, that's his only motivation, is to be Thor's friend. And he's like, that's just like the kind of characters I want to play. I want to be like that person's friend. And then he obviously went off to be imaginary Hitler in his next movie. But I thought it was really
sweet.
Who
was friends with a kid? I mean,
it's
weird, but yeah, he wanted to be his friend.
Yeah, I just thought it was sweet that he wanted to be Thor's friend. And, you know, I think Korg is one of, you know, the surprise MCU heroes that everyone loves Korg. So,
yeah, he's one of the few Funko Pops that I have.
Does he have the Hawaiian shirt on him?
No.
Yeah.
He does not.
I'm sure yours is still cool, though.
I got him in 2018, and that didn't exist yet.
Pre-Endgame.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Another day, another Doug.
But I did get him at the Funko Museum in Everett, Washington.
Ooh,
that was kind of cool. Yeah. Then we have Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, July 8th, 2022. And excited to see what direction they take that movie. I think we're all going to be surprised. Of course, Ryan Coogler is an amazing filmmaker, and I have every bit of faith that this movie is still going to be amazing. A lot of work cut out for him, though, for sure.
Yeah, I'm really, really curious to see how they deal with Chadwick Boseman's death, or the death of King T'Challa. So, off screen, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost two kings in a very, very short period of time.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want that job. I don't want to die.
Yeah, I'm curious to see just how, you know, obviously there will be a titular Black Panther, you know, whether that's Shuri or someone else. I think it'll be interesting. You know, this was obviously a title reveal that we got Wakanda Forever. We just had previously known it as Black Panther 2. But like Justin, I put all of my faith in Mr. Coogler. He has yet to let me down, and I have no doubt that as someone who was so reverent and so respectful to the character in the first place, that I'm sure that he's just been anguishing over, like, well, now what do I do with this thing? And if anyone's going to crack the code, it's going to be him.
Absolutely. And then ending the 2022 film list, we have the Marvels. No longer Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel. I guess Miss Marvel wasn't one of them, but Captain Marvel 2 was not a thing anymore. It is the Marvels, which should be fun. We'll have a lot of powerful people in one movie. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Set in modern day. So, that, you know, the original Captain Marvel was in the 90s, but this one will be set in, I'm assuming, Marvel modern day, because remember, it's 2024 in Marvel right now.
Right. They jumped 5 years ahead.
Right, which is always confusing when you saw Falcon the Winter Soldier and they're like, they're in 2024 right now. Like,
they're in the future. They got flying cars.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit, we're so far behind.
Yeah. Neo DaCosta is going to direct it. He directed the Candyman remake. So he's got kind of a horror background. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he's going to do with uniting the three, you know, the three Captain/Miss Marvel, since we'll get, you know, the Miss Marvel from the show. We'll get, obviously, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, and we'll get Monica Rambeau from, not Monica Rambeau. Was it Monica Rambeau?
Yeah. WandaVision. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then, so Miss Marvel, you mentioned Hawkeye earlier. That's going to premiere late in 2021, and Miss Marvel as well on Disney Plus is late 2021. So we will have seen all three Marvel folk before this movie comes out.
Yes. Kamala Khan.
So no need for origins per se, just some fast action booty kicking, and I'm all in for that.
I like booty kicking.
Like, you know, we were talking about Endgame a second ago, and like, even after all this horrible happens, the only real slow point is when Iron Tony and Nebula are just kind of drifting in space, and then 5 minutes later, fucking Thanos' head's cut off. You're like, oh shit, they're not wasting any time in this movie. It's pretty
nuts. I did
not
expect that.
Yeah. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, I remember everyone was freaking out in the theater, like, well, how are they going to do this now?
Credits. Thanks for coming, guys. It's been real. It would have been fun.
The world just stayed horrible.
Yeah. Sorry. So then we have in 2023, February 17th, 2023, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. They are fans of the word quantum, as we know, and this should be fun. You like the Ant-Mans, Dave?
Love the Ant-Mans, and I can't wait. I think it'll be a lot of fun. You know, if you have a title like Quantumania, obviously you're steering into the ridiculousness of everything that is Ant-Man, and it will be a lot of fun. You know, once we get more details, I would love to see this, how this connects to other things. But you know, it's just Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas, and Michelle Pfeiffer just like traveling the world, shrinking down, and like fighting bad guys. I mean, that's really all I need.
Do you want them? Do you want this to take place on Earth, or do you want them to go into some quantum realm and do battle with quantum-y things inside the quantum realm where it's all not even microscopic, it's beyond microoscopic, and they're in this crazy world and universe?
Okay. Yeah, I like them like shrinking down and interacting with like everyday things that we know and love. You know, like they shrink their cars down and stuff like that. I hope Randall Park is in it because he's my favorite. But yeah, I like the idea of them interacting with real world things, but they're really, really tiny or really, really big.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Randy? Are you on the Ant-Man train? I know you're pretty much on board for all Marvel, but Ant-Man is one of those more obscure characters.
Yeah, but I do particularly like it. I fell in love with it from the first one just because of the humor. And, I mean, how can you not love Paul Rudd?
Right.
So, yeah, totally, totally on board. Even if I was still experiencing Marvel fatigue, that's one of those movies that I would still go out of my way to see. That's how much I like Ant-Man.
Well, there you go. And Michael Peña is pretty great too when he tells his stories.
Oh my god, yeah, he's worth the price of admission.
I wanted to open with him just retelling and like everything that happened at Endgame.
That would be cool.
So check this, and then my man, he saved the Hulk, and he saved that groovy little War Machine guy, and then Captain America's like Avengers Assemble.
yeah, that would be funny. And then. Pretty much the last one on the slate, as it were, with a date, is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is May 5th, 2023. And that is exactly 2 years from now, which still isn't that far away when you consider how fast fucking time is going. There's something to be said about the older you get, the faster time flies. And I feel like next week we're already going to be talking about Guardians Volume 3 because it's just going to be 2 years from now. It's nuts the way time is working these days. But yeah, definitely on board.
It's crazy now that we've learned that after James Gunn was fired, you know, way back when, that he continued to meet with Marvel to develop the story under the guise that, you know, he wanted to set these characters up for the next director, and then he just happened to end up being the next director, got to come back, and then just pushed the date because it was really supposed to come out in 2020, but they pushed it because he is working on the Suicide Squad for DC. I think Guardians of the Galaxy was maybe like outside of Iron Man, maybe like the most fun surprise in all of the MCU of just how just utterly delightful these characters were. And I can't wait to see more of them. And they have their own little Disney Plus show. It's like Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special or something.
Yeah, that's right.
So it'll be fun.
That should be fun. Yeah, totally. And you know, I'm kind of thinking about like Christopher Nolan, you know, how like he did Batman Begins all the way through to The Dark Knight Rises, which was in, what, like 2012 or something like that. But just dealing with the franchise for almost 10 years has got to be nuts. And Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, actually came out in theaters in 2014. So they obviously started shooting it the year before. So, I mean, he's at that 10-year mark where he's just dealing with this, working with the same characters, the blood, sweat, and tears, the late nights, the rewrites, the edits, the just everything. For 10 years is a long time to be dealing with the same characters. And I don't know what is next for James Gunn, but I would want a break.
that's kind of what Nolan did, where Nolan, in between each Batman movie, he went and made like his own something else. Like in between Begins and Dark Knight, he made Inception and stuff like that. So Luckily, James Gunn kind of had a palate cleanser with the Suicide Squad, but at the end, it's really similar to Guardians of the Galaxy. So
yeah,
maybe I think it's fun that he got to work with another crop of actors, so that maybe he'll be able to bring some of them on to Guardians of the Galaxy, because he wanted Dave Bautista to be in the Suicide Squad, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I feel like Bautista wants to just... He could work with James Gunn for the rest of his life. He's like, yes, put me in a movie, whatever you want, and I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of his most ardent defenders, like, when it all surfaced. And, like, he's like, dude, I've worked with this guy, like, every day for the last, like, 5 years, and I can tell you that he's, like, the best human being ever. And if he said something stupid, he was just being stupid and, you know, lay off.
Sure. It's like, we all tell pedophile jokes, don't we? Am I wrong here? And you're like, oh, yeah, wait, I don't know.
I don't even remember what he said. That's how unimportant it was, I guess.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. I remember it was like this weird video where it's like some sort of Halloween thing. It was kind of strange. But, I mean, it was a long time. It was whatever, like in 2000 and something. Early days of Twitter, I guess. Whatever the hell that was.
Twitter.
So, back when Hammer was the only one on Twitter.
Yeah, and Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, and
Ashton Kutcher, I remember, was the original like Twitter guy, and like I remember he was the first to like a million, and everyone was like, a million Twitter followers.
Yeah, I think Jimmy Fallon was one of the early adopters too. I learned what a hashtag was watching Jimmy Fallon. It's like, what's a hashtag? I don't get it. The pound sign. So, and then Dave, as you mentioned earlier, Fantastic Four, the Marvel Phase 4 trailer ended with what quite resembles the Fantastic Four logo with the four and a circle and the blue light. And I'm sure that got your panties moist, because you are the go-to resident Fantastic Four fan. Rise of the Silver Surfer being your favorite movie ever.
I think it's interesting that they have a director in John Watts, the guy who's been directing all the Spider-Man movies. I think he's an interesting choice, in that he's already got a whole series of films for Marvel, for them to give him what I'm sure they're hoping would be another series of films. I don't know what that tells, but yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that the Fantastic Four, I think there's been enough separation from some of the less good movies. I think the original Fantastic Four, I don't think is terrible. I think there are some good parts in there. This Rise of Silver Surfer is pretty bad, and of course, Fantastic, you know, is pretty atrocious. But I'm definitely willing to give another chance for the Fantastic Four under the tutelage of Kevin Feige and the people at Marvel.
All right, that's fair. Would you like, for Fantastic Four to kick off X-Men, or would you rather see X-Men sooner?
I think we're definitely going to Fantastic Four first. I would not mind. I'm most excited for Fantastic Four kicking off Doctor Doom as the future of the MCU from a villain perspective. I really want him to be like the new Loki. I think that he's an amazingly complex and cool character, you know, and he's done some really, really terrible but awesome things. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that Doctor Doom becomes a big player in the MCU going forward.
Sure. Let me rephrase. Would you like Fantastic Four to reveal that X-Men is going to be a thing under the MCU, or would you rather see some sort of teaser prior to Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, the Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, you know, with the affiliation with Scarlet Witch. I would like to see that be like kind of like the hints that the X-Men are coming. But I mean, going through the rest of the slate, I don't see really where they would fit after that, you know, so it would have to be, you know, something like set up in Doctor Strange, or maybe teased. And then they become a bigger thing for Phase 5. Or maybe they're saving it for Phase 10, because X is 10 in the Roman numerals.
Oh, there you go.
Not that I want to wait 40 years for it.
Right. Well, I mean, because Dark Phoenix wasn't all that long ago. It was in 2019. It was summer of 2019. So, I mean, we're not even at the two-year mark yet, because it came out June 7th. So it would be nice if we add on another 3 years, so we have a five-year break from X-Men before, you know, there are even whispers, I think would be pretty effective.
Yeah, there were some pretty bad X-Men movies at the end there.
Yeah, and so I watched New Mutants like 3 days ago or something.
And you punishing yourself?
Not exactly. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
I just watched it too, yeah.
Okay, so First of all, I don't think it was that terrible. I do think that there is a good movie in there somewhere. I didn't really like how it was just the one doctor in the facility, and she just kept saying, my superior. I thought that was kind of lame, but I did like the idea of the tension being these kids that no one's listening to. They have real-world problems. They have real, like, genuine concerns and scares and fears, and they're trying to figure out who they are, and there's no one to help them. And, like, one of my least favorite settings in the history of the world is some sort of mental hospital, and I got that vibe from where they were at. So it was a really just dirty, grimy, icky place, and I would not want to be there. So just from a sympathetic standpoint, I was kind of able to relate to it in a way. Just in that, even Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is one of my favorites in that whole series, just because they're mental patients that no one's believing, and these kids are trying to cry for help, and adults aren't listening to them, right? Like, it's just like, you know what? You just need to sleep. Go to sleep. Everything will be fine. It's like, are you even listening to me? I just fucking told you that when I go to sleep, the bad things happen. And so I feel like there was a weird Nightmare on Elm Street 3 vibe going on with New Mutants. And for me, that's what kind of resonated. And I liked how it was scary and there was this unknown factor. And then sort of the unique twist of who's really guiding them at the end of the day. And so I do think there was a really good movie in there. I think it just sort of failed on the execution, but I'm not going to say it's a terrible movie like so many people have. I'll just say that I'm glad that I watched it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad at all. I think all the hate on it was, I don't want to call it completely unfounded, but I think it was blown way out of proportion.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think that it came out long enough after Dark Phoenix tour didn't have the stink. This isn't an X-Men proper film, but I mean, it's a movie that takes place in the X-Men universe. And I think that giving it a little separation from the absolute turd sandwich that is Dark Phoenix, have you both seen Dark Phoenix?
No. That's the only X-Men movie, like X-Men proper movie, that I haven't seen opening day in the theaters, and I still haven't seen it today.
Yeah. Like, literally just Google X-Men Dark Phoenix train scene. It's the only set piece in the whole film that is good, and the rest of it is a literal garbage fire. And I love X-Men more than I love any other, you know, team or affiliation in comics, and so it just breaks my heart. It's just a shit show from start to finish.
All right, that's fair. So did you say you like New Mutants more than Dark Phoenix?
I like everything I've ever seen in the history of cinema, television, car accidents, train wrecks, more than I like Dark Phoenix.
Even like Freddy Got Fingered? You like that more?
Oh, man. I would watch Freddy Got Fingered on loop for 24 hours straight than watch 15 minutes of Dark Phoenix.
All right. What about the Lion King?
Got fingered in forever.
What about the Lion King loop that you were forced to listen to at Blockbuster? Would you listen to that for a day?
I would watch that Clockwork Orange style for like a day, which is them like prying my eyes open.
That's funny.
It's such a bad movie.
It's funny you say that, because just yesterday on Don't Be Crazy, I watched a billion movies over the weekend, and I tried to figure out how that was even possible. And I said I must have had a Clockwork Orange chair to just keep my eyes open for the 30 goddamn movies that I watched in like a 48 hour period. It was hard to do, but I did.
You're just watching them all like 2x speed.
It was
faster.
So, well, we do have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, it was interesting. We didn't get a release date for Blade, you know, because they announced Blade in 2019 with Mahershala Ali playing the titular vampire slayer. So that was kind of interesting. And then Marvel has three held release dates that they don't have films associated with it. That's October 7th, 2022, July 28th, 2023, and November 3rd, 2023.
October's a good vampire month. Just saying.
It definitely is. And, you know, presumably Blade's been filming, and, you know, maybe it could come out in October. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see we have those three dates open, what's going to fill in there. So I'm I would think that we're going to be introduced to something relatively soon in one of these movies, and that's going to lead to one of these unannounced dates that will be like kind of like a surprise. Like, we couldn't tell you because we don't want to say that November 3rd, 2023 is when X-Men's coming out, because we tease X-Men in, you know, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness or something like that. But I could see him pulling something like that.
Do you... So speaking of Blade, would you want to see a vampire of sorts in the MCU before a Blade movie?
No.
There's someone's like, well, those fucking vampires are real. Are you serious? Do you want to have that conversation prior to the release of Blade?
I don't need it.
I don't need it.
I understand what vampires are. You know, you could. I mean, we're going to get Morbius, you know, which is basically a vampire.
So do you remember in... That's true. Do you know... in Blade, how they had like those weird, I guess weird is probably the wrong word, but there were symbols outside of like clubs, like for representing like vampire families and clans and stuff. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think glyphs.
Yeah. So I think it would be kind of cool if that was something that existed in this Blade universe, and maybe the camera just went by one and it was just sort of buried. Now, you know, no, it didn't stop on it or anything like that. It was just, if somebody was those clever people on the internet that pause movies, and there's one in the, like a neon sign of one in the background of a scene or something. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Just to remind us, like, hey, this is a thing. It is happening. Don't worry. Calm your tits. You will see some badass Blade action.
Yeah. If in like hindsight, we go back and like every movie's had these, every time we walk by these buildings, they've had these glyphs and we're like, how do we not see these?
Right. Like when someone points out all the time, the watchers are in Fringe. And you're just like, holy shit, those bald fucks are in like every scene, and I didn't even notice.
Did I even watch this show?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that'd be cool. And I fucking love Blade. I know Randy likes Blade too. It's just such a fun, it's like a rock star vampire movie. It's so fucking cool. There's just all kinds of crazy shit going on. It's graphic, it's gory, and it's fun. And it's not your Twilight vampires. It's some dirty, like, Skinamax 2 a.m. fucking vampires.
Stephen Dorff. I like Blade 2. I like Blade 2 a lot. You know, Ron Perlman and stuff like that. I think Blade 2 is pretty great. And then, you know, we got Blade Trinity. But we less talked about that, I guess, the better. Triple H is in it.
I don't mind Blade Trinity. I think it's fun. Ryan but Reynolds, yeah, you're it. Right. I do think that 2 is pretty awesome. But when I fucking saw Blade, the first time I ever saw Blade, it was like this 2 o'clock matinee. And I walked out, and it was like, it just felt like a bright day outside. I was like, that was just a refreshing, kick-ass fucking vampire movie. I was like 18 years old, and I was just like, holy shit, dude, that's how you make a fucking movie. I thought it was so cool and so fun, and yeah, I loved every second.
Didn't take itself seriously. It didn't set up like, you know, what happens to a lot of modern movies is they set up so many rules and so much this. Blade is like, these are vampires. They can't go out in the daytime. They don't like silver. They don't like holy water. That's all you need to know. And then, boom, movie.
Done. Yeah. Easy peasy.
And Blade is the product of, like, you know, his mom got raped by a vampire.
Right.
That's why he can walk in the daytime.
Did you know that David Goyer wrote the Blade screenplay? Oh, yeah. The Wesley Snipes ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think I knew that. He also did this movie, Dark City. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. But it's fucking nuts, dude. Like, that's like one of my favorite sci-fis from the 90s. And I think it's very underrated. And not a whole lot of people have seen it. And it's pretty fucking badass. It has Rufus Sewell and Kiefer Sutherland and Jennifer Connelly. And it's so creepy and so weird and so dark. And I don't think it gets proper credit.
Mm-hmm. So, Randy can put that on his list.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Dark City.
Absolutely.
Not the Light City, but Chubby the Dark Rain. City. Yeah. But check it out. So, sticking to Disney, we'll move right along to Indiana Jones. David, I understand you have some fun Indiana Jones 5 news.
I do. Mads Mikkelsen, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, is joining the cast for Indiana Jones 5, said, quote, "It was on reading the script, it was everything I wished it would be." So, I mean, that's pretty good. His full quote was, "I'm very, very excited about it. I rewatched Raiders of the Lost Ark the other day. It is so well done and so charming, and it's such great storytelling. So yes, it's a great honor to be part of that franchise that I grew up with. I'm in a lucky position where they let me read the script before, and yes, it was everything I wished it would be. So that was just great. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is good. You know, coming from somebody who professes himself as a fan. That can only bode well for the film, because honestly, we're not hearing anything from anyone else. So they're throwing us scraps here by giving us that, by even allowing him to talk, and the Disney snipers haven't taken him out. Exactly.
Well, he even talks about that he got to work on his characters. You know, I do think I'm invited to create a character. I think that everyone wants that. That's why you pick certain. That's why they pick certain actors that they can, so that they can think up certain things, and it will be a collaboration as it always should be. Interesting enough, again, a little Writers of Justice. There is a kind of genre mix in Indiana Jones always. So,
yeah, it's action adventure with a little bit of science fiction. It's got a lot going on with Indiana Jones.
Now, Randy, what's your percentage excitement to worry? You know, Indy 4 definitely, you know, it had its problems, it had its pluses, but, you know, also kind of left a bad taste in everyone's mouth for Indiana Jones. Are we not concerned just because we had Indiana Jones 4, so the bar is low for the sequel? Or is there still a certain part of you that's worried that they can go lower?
I don't think it's going to go lower, to be honest. The bar was set pretty low with Crystal Skull. Even then, I still do enjoy watching that from time to time. But I'm not as worried, to be honest, because I think one of the best things, and this is going to sound like sacrilege, but I think one of the best things that they could have done was change the director, because I don't really feel like Spielberg felt connected to it anymore. I don't think he was necessarily the right person for the story anymore, where he was absolutely the right person in the 80s. I think going the James Mangold route is brilliant. Like I said before, if we can kind of give old Indy the same send off that we gave old Logan, you know, or not even the same, but I mean, with that much reverence.
You mean clone him and have him kill himself?
If it can be treated, you know, with the same amount of reverence and respect and everything, then I feel like it's gonna be good. And honestly, and I don't know Mads Mikkelsen's taste in movies other than the fact that he liked Indiana Jones when he was growing up. But if he says that it is everything he wanted it to be and he is happy to be a part of it and creating a character with it, you know, that kind of thing, I'm going to say that's good fucking news, and that is a sign that we are going in the right direction with it. And I've very much want to have an Indy 5 in this world, because I would like to go out on a high note. Last Crusade would have been going out on a high note. Crystal Skull, unfortunately, was not. But this is a chance for the franchise to redeem itself. And I'm going to go on record as saying there's no way it's going to be worse.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have to play this back at like the deposition of when you went out on a murder spree. And it's like, he's had all his faith in this movie, officer.
What is your hype level for the potential of more Indiana Jones action figures?
Low. Because I think the short-sighted people that make action figures and sell them are going the 6-inch route, and they're abandoning my dear, beloved 3 3/4-inch. And I feel like even if Hasbro did do any kind of like indie retro line or revival line, they're going to go the Star Wars Black Series route and make them 6-inch scale. Because indie's never really been done at that scale. So I could see that being very popular among collectors. And I'm not going to fault them for it, because I'm really happy with the 2008 line of figures that we got. There's not a whole lot of characters that I still want in that scale that they haven't already produced. I would love some with some more accurate articulation, sure. You know, and there's a few characters that I would love to get, but I'm not holding my breath, really.
Sure.
At all.
What if let's say a company like Mezco were to be able to get like their hands on the license, because they do a lot of like you know, retro-y weird stuff, but they've also gone, like, I mean, aside from, like, just their generic 5-point ones, you know, like the Batman toys that I just can't wait to get my fucking hands on.
Right.
Know, they've gone, like, crazy town banana pants on some of their higher-end figures. But I think they could do that sort of franchise justice. But I don't know if Disney or Hasbro, whatever, you know, say, you know what, we're busy right now making Star Wars shit. Why don't you guys take a crack at this? But I do think that they could do it justice. I think they're one of the companies out there that could do a really good job.
I agree. I think there's a lot of companies that could. And regardless of the scale, I think something that just respects Indiana Jones and the heritage behind it and doesn't just make a couple core figures, maybe if they kind of, even if they didn't deep dive into the older movies as long as they did for the newer movie, something like that. I don't know. I just feel like it deserves something. Mm. And I'll be happy to see anything on the shelves, to be honest, just because I love the franchise that much. But it's going to take a lot for me to consider buying it. And even though I do trash talk 6-inch figures, I do have, you know, a handful of them, and I will still buy for franchises that I really love and enjoy. You know, so I would absolutely suck it up and probably buy, you know, an Indiana Jones figure or two for my shelf. But it's just one of those things where traditionally, even back in the 80s, Indiana Jones didn't do very well. In 2008, it didn't do very well either. I mean, it didn't have the toy store appeal. Most of the sales were done online. I think toy companies almost consider it a toxic property and are going to treat it with kid gloves.
Do you think that has to do with just the, you know, the lack of diversity in the toys? I mean, let's be honest. Most people, I understand that, you know, there are collectors out there who want everything, but I mean, most people want Indiana Jones and they don't want the German mechanic, or they don't want Spalco, or they don't want Mutt. You know, they want Indy, they want the whip, they want the hat. Do you think that hurts the line, and that, you know, Star Wars has a million different characters? You know, they have good guys and bad guys that you want to play with. Do you think Indy would do better if they had, you know, maybe Mads Mikkelsen's character is this iconic villain now and
less Nazi characters?
Well, okay, no, I see what you're saying. Like less old white men in suits and uniforms as their villains, right? Look at Star Wars, though. You know, yeah. Look at Star Wars, though. Like that's you're describing all of the Imperial officers and how many action figures of those that we got over the years.
Yeah, but we also got Vader. We got Stormtroopers. We got the Emperor. We got Royal Guards.
Well, okay, so let's look at Temple of Doom. Mola Ram's pretty badass looking, you know. You know, we got different looking villains. Tote is a pretty cool looking villain. The Cairo Swordsman, which was like one of the original only villain figures you could get back in the 80s. You know, at the beginning you can get Tote and the Cairo Swordsman, and then it was Indiana Jones and Marion versus them, and that's it. That was your four action figures you get for this movie.
A tag team.
Yeah. That's a tag team match right there. What the direction I'd like to see go, if that's the case, and they realize that, okay, everybody only wants Indiana Jones, and they did release a whole bunch of different Indiana Jones figures, different versions of him and outfits and different articulation and action features, like whip arm and stuff like that in the 2008 line. Here's what you do if that's going to be the case, if that's going to be how you market it. Then do either really cool, intricate diorama/playset pieces. You know, give me the interior of a temple that Indy is going through and, you know, trying to avoid setting off booby traps. Give me something that has some sort of play value and something that looks really cool on my shelf. If it's meant just as a vehicle for Indiana Jones himself, okay, then cool. Give me an environment in which to put it. If you're not going to give me other characters for him to interact with, give me an environment.
Mm-hmm. Like Mezco did with the fucking, I'm going back to the Batman, the 66 Batman.
It's
a fucking Batcave. It's also Wayne Manor. All the villains. Yeah. It's the car. It's fucking awesome.
And that is the coolest set. Yeah. I saw that and I'm like, I don't need this. I don't want this, but I have to have this. You know?
I know. What about, I know you don't do the 12-inch thing, but like Hot Toys could probably make a pretty amazing Indiana Jones figure with all the cool accessories that you mentioned, his hat, his whip, his coat, you know, his satchel, maybe a little bitty idol or something like that. And I think that would be really cool. It would cost like $400 or something, but yeah. It would look really cool.
for a brief while, for a hot minute, I was collecting the Sideshow 12-inch when they first came out. The very first one that they released was Jedi Luke, and if you got the special edition one, he came with like a Rancor bone. Or it wasn't a Rancor bone. It was like a Gamorrean guard bone that he used to try to shove in the Rancor's mouth. But super incredibly highly detailed 12-inch figures. I love that. I love them. I love the look of them. And like when we go to Frankensons and they have those glass cases filled with hundreds of them, mm-hmm. I sit there and I stare in awe going, oh my God, this would look amazing in my house. I love the detail. I love these. I love everything about them. But they're just so big. And, you know, for the amount of for what I can display per space, per a little bit of space that I have, because I have a really small house, you know, I can't justify it. So right. That's another it's nostalgia. It's me being stubborn, and it is being more economical with the limited space that I have that keeps me entrenched in my 3¾-inch collection.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, those 12-inch figures, they... So something that we sell are Ichiban statues, or figures, rather. And they don't do anything, but they... I always joke about them being like equivalent to like the old lady that has a curio cabinet full of little figurines or spoons or bells or something, where if you only have one, it looks stupid. But if you have a whole case full of them, then it looks amazing and it's jaw-dropping, mm-hmm. and it looks like it belongs in a museum kind of thing. And so
exactly.
Those hot toys are... very quite equivocal to that same sentiment, where if you have all the stormtroopers or you have all these Jedi, then it looks fucking badass. But if you just got the one, then you're like, yeah, that costs $400. How cool is that? Everyone's like, all right, whatever you say, dude. But then when you have 15 or 20 of them,
yeah,
then it's amazing.
But it's also like when you quantify it like that, it's like, yeah, I got this one. It costs $400. Look how badass it is. All right, cool. Well, now, hey, I got dozens of them. I've got $15,000 worth of 12-inch figures in a $200 IKEA case, you know, with some cheap LED lighting. And it's like, that is a fucking car parked up on my wall. Yeah. You know?
Dedication, man.
It gets wild to think about. Now, you know, and I'm not saying shit, because I have a lot of vintage Star Wars collectibles, and the old stuff from the 70s and 80s can get kind of pricey too, but even then, it just doesn't kind of take up the same amount of space, the same amount of real estate. And I don't know. I just look at it differently, because it's kind of a quasi-antique at this point in time. I appreciate the craftsmanship and the detail. And damn if they are not stunning pieces. And even more than the 12-inch figures, if you go to Comic-Con and certain booths have like the quarter-inch scale ones, or not quarter-inch, but the quarter-scale ones. So they're like 2 feet tall or a foot and a half tall, and they're just ginormous, and they're actually wearing cloth clothing, and it looks like a little mini shrunken down human, because everything is scaled so perfectly. Like even at 12-inch scale, you get cloth clothes on them, and sometimes it doesn't lay quite right, and it just looks like a doll wearing clothes. You know, you get to the larger scale ones, and it's like, God damn, they totally shrunk down Harrison Ford, you know. Yeah.
And he only costs $1,200.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and those are the ones that it's like, I need a special glass case and an alarm and like a light from above, and I need to like do a whole museum setup for it in my house to do it justice. If I'm getting like a $1,500 statue, it's like, that is the centerpiece of my home. I invite people over and say, have you seen the statue? And they'll all know what I'm talking about, because I can't fucking shut up about it, because I just blew $1,500 on it, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it, man. I saw this, speaking of Sideshow, I think it was, they had like a Hordak statue or something like that, and it was pretty badass, but it was very pricey, and it clashes with everything that I own. But I was just like, fuck, I want this, but that's just...
It looks incredible.
That's a whole nother layer of nerd that I am just unable to commit to at this point in my life. I think I've passed it. That's something that you have when you're single and you got the disposable income and you don't really care, and you're proud of it. And if I were to have it, it would be in a closet. Like, I can't let anybody see that. No one can know that I own this thing. And that's sad. That's black market collecting, where you know you have it, but nobody else does.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously as you get older, your priorities shift and stuff like that, to where, you know, even having, you know, a small amount of disposable income
Yeah, I can't spend that kind of money. Just because the thing is you're not just gonna buy one hot toy. You know, like mm-hmm. you know, it's you know, okay, I have this badass Darth Vader hot toy, you know. He's just by himself. No, I gotta get
his butler, Dave. He needs his butler.
Exactly. I gotta get Director Krennic now to like banter with, and so
gotta get the castle.
Oh my god! Yeah, and it's just so much. You know, like we have friends that we work with who are like just heavy into hot toys, and their collection looks incredible. And you know, it's nothing to do with the craftsmanship of the items. It just, yeah, I can't spend the thousands of dollars it would take to collect hot toys.
Yeah, it's tough. All right. Well, there you have it. If Indiana Jones figures come out, Randy's not buying. He's had his fill.
He says Indiana Jones figures are stupid.
Nah.
I didn't say that exactly. We'll take it as a wait and see.
Sure, we'll put a pin in that.
Did you guys see some of the tweets from James Gunn today? He was talking to someone. Asked him. He said that Suicide Squad is going to have numerous post-credit scenes, you know, similar to how Guardians of the Galaxy 2 just had like 15 of them. And one Twitter user actually asked Gunn if he turned down a Superman flick and why. And he basically confirmed that he turned down a Superman movie because the Suicide Squad interested me more. Just because one character is more famous or popular doesn't mean I'm going to be more creatively invigorated by the story for him over the 2 years it takes to write and direct a film. So that was kind of exciting. I mean, it's exciting. They offered it, you know, I don't know if James Gunn necessarily is the director for a Superman movie. I would see it, but it's cool to see that, you know, he kind of turned it down to do something he was more interested in. And it's also worth noting. Yeah. It's also worth noting that there were zero pickup shots and zero post-production reshoots for this film. So, you know, we always hear, you know, meddling or release this cut or this cut because of all like the studio interference. It appears that, you know, they did no additional photography for this film. So presumably what we see in the film, in the theater, will be what James Gunn wanted us to see.
Cool. I mean, I think he's proven himself, right? He's writing his own tickets. He's picking the movies that he wants to do. He has nothing to prove at this point. So it is in their best interest, especially given the track record from DC and Warner Brothers, to just have a hands-off approach.
Yeah, and if you're a hashtag restore the Snyderverse person, read the room. And, you know, if someone posts something that it's relevant for you to drop your hashtag, that's fine. But you should not be dropping it on things like funeral announcements and things like that. If you do that, you're just a garbage piece of shit person. You know, I've no problem with you spreading the hashtag if you want to, if you want to restore the Snyder Universe. But, you know, do it when it's relevant. Just spamming it on every post everywhere does not endear anyone to your cause.
That is true. As a community manager myself, I can attest to poor timed tweets. It's not a good look. Don't do it.
It's not a good look.
Speaking of good looks, let's talk about the Bad Batch. They're a fun, unique bunch. And I watched it today. I kind of forgot it was a thing until this afternoon. And it's a little long, you know, this first episode. Kind of reminded me of how when the Clone Wars started, it was like three episodes kind of crammed into one. It was like released as a movie or something.
Bound Chrysosis.
Yeah. So it was a lot was happening, but I found myself ridiculously distracted and just not really invested. I did not give this series the proper time that it deserved. I just felt like I don't really have a horse in this race, as it were. I do like that it takes place right after or leading up to and right after the Execute Order 66. But when I'm watching Caleb Crawdad or whatever that kid's name was hopping all around, I'm like, just shoot him. I don't need to see this kid.
A young Kanan?
Yeah. That's Kanan.
Yeah, I know. And I'm just like, just put him down. And
I agree. I think it should have been two episodes because while I enjoy it because I love clones and stuff like that, I thought the runtime was a little long. We are going to get 16 episodes of this show.
I think if they wanted to, they could have made this like two episodes and dropped them on the same day, kind of like how they did for WandaVision. But yeah, an hour. I when I turned it on, I was surprised because I was ready to commit, you know, like 30 to 40 minutes to watch this. And when I saw an hour 14, I'm like, I got to break this into two now because I was watching some before dinner and some after dinner. And so it was like, I don't have a straight hour 14 to watch it. And I felt bad that I had to start and stop the thing.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Randy?
Loved the shit out of it. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I think it is, it's not only meant to be like the spiritual successor of the Clone Wars. It absolutely is the Clone Wars personified and continued. They just can't call it that because we are now entering the Imperial era. You know, we do get to see Order 66. We do get to see, a lot of fan service, like seeing a young Kanan, escaping, being executed. And I fell in love with the members of the Bad Batch while watching their arc in the last season, season 7 of the Clone Wars. I think it's fantastic. The idea of a female clone that's also genetically screwed up, another altered, or not altered, enhanced clone, I guess we're calling them. That makes me wonder, because I was looking, that somebody had posted a side-by-side image of what a young Boba or young Jango Fett clone looks like versus this female Omega clone from the Bad Batch, and the facial features are identical, so it's just like they tweaked the chromosome and made her female. So I'm wondering if it's still Boba's DNA or if it's somebody else's, but or not Boba. I keep saying
Jango.
That. Yeah, but let's just call it Fett DNA. But I love it. I think it's fun, and I know some people are going to be like, oh, they just inserted a child into it to get kids interested into it again, so that they can sell toys and shit like that.
Woman, it had to be a girl. They got woke. Star Wars is ruined. There's no females in Star Wars.
Star Wars is for kids, and this is a cartoon. So fuck me, right? It's like, right. Okay.
I love it because it's just so much fun. And I love my only gripe would be like, I'm an Empire guy. When Tarkin showed up, I'm like, sweet. The Disney canon is doing a lot of stuff right, you know, with the Mandalorian and stuff like that. But one of the things they're really doing is they're really making Tarkin a thing, and they're really making Grand Admiral Thrawn a thing. You know, they're trying to make Fetch happen, and they made it happen. And I'm just here for it. That I love it so much. The only thing, the only one I'm kind of like, if I'm like, they keep trying to make Saw Gerrera thing, and I just can't care enough about Saw Gerrera. And you know, they keep,
and he looks different every time we see him in animated form.
They just keep interjecting him in these things, and I get that he's kind of like, you know, an early spark or linchpin for the rebellion. But I would just much rather it'd be like Bail Organa or something like that. Like, I'm just not interested in Saw Gerrera. I love everything with the clones. I know it's going to be a controversial take. I really liked that, you know, is it Crosshair? Is that the one who went bad?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, bad is...
Right. No, I don't mean bad.
Maybe the wrong word, but yeah, following orders. Yeah.
Separated from the group, because I really like that creates like a, you know, an enemy that is legitimate, that is, you know, in the same power level, it's the same wheelhouse. It's not Tarkin sending Darth Vader to go after this batch of clones. You know, it's I like the idea of you know, Crosshair getting together a nether, you know, ragtag band of clones, and them just going at each other. And
right,
you know,
it reminds me of like Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid kind of thing. Like, they ran together, and then now Pat Garrett has to go and take Billy down.
Yeah. Yeah, so I really like that dynamic. You know, I like Omega. I like the idea of this, like, small, broken clone.
Is he Rambo? Is he the one with the headband?
No, Omega's the
clone. That's the kid.
That's the kid, that's right. Okay, the little girl. Yeah. Okay. What's Rambo's name?
Oh, my God. It was
Hunter.
Hunter, yeah, you go.
Okay.
And I like Wrecker. I don't know why, but I just love the big stupid.
He's the brute, right?
Yeah, he's the big brute guy. So, and then you obviously got Echo and stuff. So, yeah, I'm in Tech. I'm
yeah, here I like for this. Tech. He's my favorite.
Yeah, I love clones. I got a clone army that is normally displayed when my house is not being destroyed. I was just, like I said, I was a little thrown by the length of it. I was like, I turned it on. And I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be a little bit longer episode, like 40 minutes. And it's like hour 14. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, and then he texts me, it's an hour and 14 minutes. I'm like, fuck!
Well, so, yeah, I knew you were going to watch for the show, and I didn't want you to turn it, like, if we were going to record at 7, I didn't want you to be like, eh, it's like 6:15, let's just turn this on, and be like,
yeah, that's what would have happened. You know my body. Yeah, that's exactly what would have happened.
I hope Tarkin continues, you know, I hope that this Kanan connection isn't a one-off. I'm hoping that, you know, he is the person they're going to look for on J-15 or wherever they at the end of the show. I'm here for that. You know, Dave Filoni loves to, you know, interject his other franchises into what he's working on. And, you know, so we could see some really, really cool things in here. You know, Ahsoka loves clones. You know, we could kind of get a catch up on her. I'm sure Rex will show up at some point, just because of his relationship with the Bad Batch, and especially with Echo.
So, they were like, we know somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned Saul Guerrera earlier, and what I think is important to note about him is that he is morally flexible. You know, he's got a lot of gray, and he is okay with blowing people up and the greater good. And I think it could be an interesting dynamic if we see insurgents or rebels doing some pretty gangster shit and then having sort of this, you know, appearing like criminals. Like, there is a way to fight for a cause, and then we see them doing things where maybe civilians get killed, you know? Like the whole marketplace in Rogue One is kind of hard to watch. You know, it's pretty intense, and, you know, you think of, like sort of a Black Hawk Down sort of situation where everyday people are trying to just live their lives outside of danger, and they're caught in crossfires. And I think that Saul Guerrera sort of brings that danger to the table, and I think it could be pretty interesting if we see the dark side of what they're fighting for. You know, like even who's the dude that you don't like in Rogue One that is getting his own show?
Cassian Andor.
Cassian Andor, yeah, he's done things he's not proud of. He's done bad things. He's killed a lot of people. So I think. I mean, I know it's a cartoon and all, and they might have to find a way to dial it down in some way, but I do think that would be an interesting avenue to explore, especially since the Bad Batch is trying to find their place in this world, and if they're looking to their left and seeing bad and looking to their right and also seeing bad, then that could be a pretty challenging dynamic.
Yeah, no, I'm here for everything you're saying.
Wouldn't it be fun if the Rebels were portrayed as the bad guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like for the terrorists and insurgents that they are, and the Empire are the good guys.
You just have those posters and these movies playing in the theaters of how horrible they are.
Yeah,
and then the Bad Batch is truly the A-Team.
And I like that they're setting up, because in the history of Star Wars, there is no group of people more despicable than the comedians. And I hope they just continue to portray them as the pieces of shit they are. Those cloning motherfuckers. I hope that they get what's coming to them, and Bad Batch shows up and just, like, cuts their fucking heads off.
There you go.
They're bad.
They're long necks. Three horns never play with long necks.
Yeah. No one should play with these long necks, because they're just the absolute worst.
You know, yeah, you called them Kaminoans? Is that what they're called? I thought I heard them.
Kaminoans.
So I've always thought it was Kaminoans, but then they said something on... The way that I think it was Tech that was talking, he called them a name
like Kaminoans or something like that.
Yeah,
they didn't
go tomato with, like, tomato kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, have I been saying it wrong this whole time? I'm like, those folks on Kamino, let's call it that.
Well, because I judge that based on how I heard it first pronounced in episode 2. So when we're sitting in that Dexter. Diner with the dude, Dexter. I think his name. Yeah, yeah, the guy that owns the diner, the cook of the diner.
No, beyond the Outer Rim.
Kamino and Saber Nerd. So that's how I remember how to pronounce it. Kamino and Saber Dart.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he said it, I was like, am I saying it wrong all this time?
Since 2002? 19 years of saying this shit wrong?
Judith.
Yeah, Judith. So, I mean, like, I think the proto version of the Bad Batch are these clones called the Nulls, which I've talked about several times in the podcast from, you know, several novels. And a lot of what they were kind of was exemplified in this episode. And I know Dave Filoni loves to pull from the expanded universe. And I'm hoping that he takes a lot of the cool stuff from those books and kind of adapts it to, you know, fit within this current continuity. I don't want him to copy and paste and just do it. I'm not looking for him just to recreate, you know, what I wanted to get from like Delta Squad, but I think it would be really, really cool if, you know, he took some of those things. And one of the things was they just hate Kaminoans, and
one of them
shows up like in a later book, and he's got like gray leather gloves, and they're like, "Where'd you get gray leather?" And then, you know, you take the hint that he probably skinned a Kaminoan to make gloves.
Yikes!
they're not nice to the clones.
Yeah, it's got like one of those ear necklaces, like in Vietnam. It's gross.
Yeah, be a fucking man. And I love any time we can see anything about Order 66. I think Order 66 is one of my... I know it's terrible because it kills the Jedi, but like Order 66 is one of my favorite parts of like Star Wars lore in general. And, you know, we got to see kind of like a different side of it during the last season of the Clone Wars. We got to see like a hint of it in this one where we got to see what happened to poor Kanan's master. So anytime I can see clones murdering Jedi, I am here for it.
All right. See how many more Jedi they kill. There's a bunch that are loosey-goosey out in the wild.
Yeah. I'm going to need them accounted for and tagged and bagged.
Yeah. It's edgy.
But, yeah. Tarkin, he's not a nice guy either, but he's not supposed to be.
Yeah, I was thinking about it because you know how he's wearing the uniform that he's pretty much wearing in the Star Wars movies. And is that what their uniforms look like during the Clone Wars, or were they different? Did he get new digs post Clone Wars, or was it always sort of that dark? I don't know if it's dark green or gray or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like an olive, like mm-hmm. a dark olive, almost like a tan in Episode 4. In Clone Wars, it was more like standard gray. Like you would see like in an Imperial officer, but now that he's, I'm assuming, primed for his promotion to governor or not governor to Moff and then Grand Moff, I think that we'll see his outfit kind of change. But
I'm glad you said governor because I feel like in Episode 4 she calls him Governor Tarkin. Am I crazy?
She does. No, she does.
That's like his title. Like she's Princess Leia, he's the governor of the Eridu system. And obviously he was promoted, you know, within the Empire. So that's his non-imperial title, like Count Dooku. Gotcha.
He's the Duke of Ted.
That's right. And I'm the Earl.
Right, because he was the Admiral in this cartoon that we watched today.
Correct.
Right.
So I was like, is he an Admiral? Is he a General? Is he a Governor? What is he?
On his homeworld, he is a Governor. Like, kind of like, you know, how Barack Obama, people still refer to him as president and stuff sure. like that.
Or Tyson Champ. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly, Tyson Champ. So that's his non-imperial designation.
Got it. It's Casual Friday. Okay, well, cool. So you guys are ready. In the next episode, is that going to be in a couple hours? They had to do it on May the 4th because of Star Wars Day, and now we're going to get another episode on Friday. It's going to air continuously on Friday. Is that how it's going to work going forward?
I believe so. That's how it's traditionally been with Star Wars content. I think the next one is dropping this Friday. Although, to backtrack to Marvel, I did hear that they're going off of Fridays into Wednesdays for when Loki drops. So that's going to be dropping at Tuesday nights at midnight instead of Thursday night at midnight.
Yeah, well, because they need people to start going back to the movie theaters.
Yeah,
don't want to drop it on Friday. That's movie night. We want you to go see our movies in the theater on Fridays.
So the 4th is kind of an interesting day, only because we are not going to have a May the 4th on a Friday anytime soon. In 2023, it's on Thursday, but then I think the leap year fucks it up. So then May the 4th is going to be on a Saturday in 2024. So we might get spoiled and get two episodes at the start of a series every Star Wars day.
I like it. I'm here for it.
Sounds good to me.
Especially since we got like 30 Star Wars shows in development.
Yeah, there's a lot of action, man. Holy shit. Ugh.
There's enough to go around. Everybody gets a piece.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's beautiful if Bad Batch isn't your thing, you know, something else will come along. You know, Loki's coming on in a month or so. If that's not your thing, we got What If. Eventually, we got this Cassian Andor show. We got Obi-Wan. You know, something. If you're not into what you're seeing, just wait a couple months and something will come along for you.
Yeah, Loki is June 11th.
Yeah, Star Wars and Marvel is for everyone.
Yeah, and for the next foreseeable future.
Right.
Lot.
And it's important that when people say it's for everyone, it doesn't mean that everything in those things are for everyone.
Right. It's more of a children of all ages as opposed to every single human being is going to like.
Exactly.
Yes. Children of all ages is a perfect way to describe it.
I describe things perfectly often. There's a soundbite in the escape pod where you say that is the exact perfect way to describe it. And it was based off of what I had said. I don't remember what it was anymore, but I was like, thanks, Randy. I'm throwing that in.
Nice. Love it.
Heap. Yeah. Whole heap. All right. So that's the Bad Batch. It is airing now on Disney Plus. Very excited about that. I mean, at least I'm, after having this conversation, I've become more excited. I've talked myself into a series that hasn't even happened yet as far as what I want to see. And I might have missed the mark completely, but I'm excited at the prospect of seeing a dark side of the insurgents and horrible things happening that are done by the good guys, as it were. And the Bad Batch has to, you know, draw a line and figure out where the hell they want to be in this universe.
That's right. They got to thread that needle.
Yeah, that's hard to do, especially wearing a helmet.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And Randy knows he's the resident sewer of the group. he is the tailor.
You got to rub it back and forth.
He's taking down seven giants with one blow.
You got to lick it. Blow. You got to lick the thread. That way you can get it through the needle, through the eye.
I lick the needle. I'm doing it wrong.
I think it's just a bad idea to lick any kind of needle. I recommend this. This was used, man.
This was used. So in honor of Star Wars Day, which was May the 4th, and also Stephen K. Jane's birthday, happy birthday, Stephen. I know it's past, but I'm sorry. This list is dedicated to you. David, tell us all about this list.
Well, I have a fun list. The fine folks at Collider have ranked every lightsaber battle in the history of the Star Wars films. I wanted to read this. There are a couple caveats. First of all, this is only going to include the films. It's not going to include the TV series, like Clone Wars, Rebels, Mandalorian, and all of those other things. Just because he didn't want the list to be like 700 things long, but he does say that Ahsoka Tano versus Darth Vader from Twilight of the Apprentice would arguably number one, if that helps. It also does not include. So they define a lightsaber battle as someone with a lightsaber fighting somebody else with a lightsaber. So that, you know, that eliminates things like Obi-Wan versus Jango Fett and, of course, Darth Vader's iconic Rogue One hallway scene, because it's not really a lightsaber fight. It's a maniac in a black suit going down a hallway murdering people with a red stick of death. So that is not included in here either. So without any further ado, I'll get them. There are 20 of them, so I'll go kind of quick because I'm sure we don't want to sit here and spend too much time on all of these, but some may garner special needs. Number 20 is Palpatine versus Mace Windu, Kit Fisto, Agent Kolar, and Sassy Tin from Revenge of the Sith.
I'll try spinning. That's a good trick.
Yeah, that's funny. That was the best thing to come out of that whole fight. The meme.
It's not good.
And how he's two-handing his itty-bitty hilt. That's funny.
Yeah, and half the time it's Anakin's.
Lightsaber. So much so that they released the action figure with Anakin's hilt in his hand instead of his own personal lightsaber hilt, because those are the still photos that they got from Lucasfilm had him using Anakin's prop.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What's the problem? Number 19 is Qui-Gon Jinn versus Darth Maul, round one in the desert, where Darth Maul is just wielding his single-bladed lightsaber and he's ready to just run over that Anakin Skywalker brat.
Yeah, that's a good scene. I like that part.
Yeah, I think that it loses points because it's, you know, literally a blink and you miss it type. It's really a tease for the meat that's to come later, which, spoiler alert, will rank a lot higher on this list. Number 18 is Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Count Dooku, round two. So that's the duel in Revenge of the Sith aboard the Invisible Hand to try to save Chancellor Palpatine.
So it ends cool, but we get kind of cheated out at the beginning of that fight.
Right.
My powers have grown since we last met.
I hate how quickly Obi-Wan is dispatched.
I know.
It's just like, I'm gonna throw a catwalk on top of you and awkwardly, like, pin your legs down, and you're just gonna lay there.
Yeah, it looked painful and poorly CGI created.
Yeah.
Number 17 is Rey and Kylo Ren versus the Knights of Ren and the Emperor's Royal Guard from Rise of Skywalker.
All right, so it counts their weapons as sabers then.
Yes.
Because you said lightsaber on lightsaber, I think.
I did, but he also mentions that he's going to break his rule a couple times. So
okay.
You are correct.
That, I mean, that is a cool scene, though. Very big throne room. So much room for activities.
Number 16 is probably going to be one of the first controversial things on the list. It's Yoda versus Count Dooku from Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. I think everyone was shocked and loved this scene, but it is pretty quick, and it definitely detracts from the Obi-Wan Anakin fight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 1,000 times better than the Obi-Wan and Anakin fight, and especially when Anakin's just like twirling his saber around in front of the camera, and it's all these close-ups on their faces. You're like, dude, come on.
Yeah,
this is lame.
This list puts that at number 15, one spot above the Count Dooku.
List has lost all credibility, David.
I definitely see what Lucas was going for with that with the fight where, like you said, you have all the shadows and like the blue light and the red light. It's clear that he's trying to recreate some of the magic from Empire Strikes Back, but yeah, it never comes to fruition.
And we should mention that Yoda's also spinning, which is a good trick fighting Dooku.
Number 14 is Rey versus Kylo Ren, round 2. This is the fight in Rise of Skywalker where they're not really in the same room, but they're still fighting. This is when Rey is on Kylo Ren's ship and Kylo Ren is down on the planet looking for Rey. It's a very confusing fight.
Yeah, I honestly don't even remember that. I've seen that movie. Right, I've seen Rise of Skywalker twice, and it was both on the same day, and that was whenever the hell that was in December when it came out. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's when Rey is in that all-white room with Kylo Ren, but it doesn't matter.
I don't even remember that.
Number 13 is Kylo Ren versus Finn. And it seems a bit high on the list for that.
That is way high. This is somebody who really likes the sequels.
Well, I don't think we've come to... so far, there's been zero lightsaber fights from the original trilogy on here yet. So I guess we'll keep tabs on that. Number 12, the Geonosis free-for-all, which I guess technically, Dooku has a lightsaber, sort of, but... This may bend those rules again.
Right. It was cool seeing a stadium filled with, 100 lightsabers all of a sudden pop up. I mean, until the prequels, we had very minimal exposure to lightsabers and how cool they were. So it was kind of neat to see an army of Jedi kicking some ass with them.
Yeah. And Padme. Don't forget Padme's there with her blaster.
Right. It's important. Shooting bugs.
And her midriff. Don't forget that.
I never forget. Number 11, Yoda versus Palpatine from Revenge of the Sith, when they're fighting in this. And then I threw the Senate at him. The whole Senate. Literally.
Yeah. I hate how he gets shocked at the beginning when he's like, hey, you're a piece of shit, and I got you all figured out. And then
he's like,
Palpatine just zaps him. He's like, okay, we'll go on three, right? One, zap. You're like, oh, man, come on, dude. You should have saw that coming.
Number 10, and what may set Obi-Wan Kenobi as the greatest Jedi of all time, Obi-Wan versus General Grievous in Utapau in Revenge of the Sith. It's pretty good. Cuts off all his hands.
Yeah.
Look how cool you are. All right, number 9, Rey versus Kylo Ren, round 3. This is from Rise of Skywalker when they're fighting on the destroyed Death Star with all the water coming up and... Spoiler, Rey wins this fight.
And that one was kind of cool.
And then brings Kylo Ren back to life. But even better than that, they list as number 8, Kylo Ren versus Rey, round 1 from The Force Awakens, when Rey finally kind of channels her inner Force power. And I think, as someone who has a complicated history with the sequel trilogy, I think that if Kylo Ren is calling Luke's lightsaber to him and it flies past him and goes into Rey's hand, I think that's a pretty cool and iconic scene from the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm. And it's like up like this. I mean, I know this is an audio podcast, but I'm reenacting it. Right? Doesn't she have it up in the air?
Yes.
She catches it. Yeah.
And then we have number 7, Kylo Ren versus Luke Skywalker. And I think a lot of people are going to have a gut reaction. This is too high on the list, but I think there's a lot of emotion in this fight. And even though we know that it's not really Luke Skywalker, I think this is a pretty good fight. Maybe even the highlight of Last Jedi.
I don't even think their sabers touch, though.
One, the two people got lightsabers.
They don't have to touch.
They can't touch because one of them is not there.
Right. I mean, if we're talking lightsaber fights and they don't even gingerly touch their tips, then I don't think it counts.
It's a gentleman's duel.
So what I'm reading out of this is if you don't touch tips, it doesn't count.
Right. Other than that, it's just practice.
Yeah.
Number 6, we finally have our very first lightsaber battle from the original trilogy. And I don't think it'll be any doubt that the lowest ranked original trilogy lightsaber duel is also the first time we ever saw two individuals fight with a lightsaber. I'm talking, of course, of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader fighting on the Death Star.
Yeah, and that's pretty high on this list, to be honest with you. I think that fight is gross.
Yeah, I think they're given... I think in the lens of seeing the entire 9 films, I think this fight has a lot of weight to it. But I think if you were judging it on the merit of we saw this in 1977... and we know that there's a backstory, but we didn't have 3 movies to explain this backstory, I think this definitely goes lower on the list.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Number 5, Anakin Skywalker versus Obi-Wan Kenobi on Mustafar from Revenge of the Sith. This is probably the longest of the lightsaber battles on this list, and I love it to death. I love Battle of the Heroes, the music that plays during it. I love they play the Duel of Fates during it, and just the absurdity. This is like... probably the most absurd of the lightsaber battles between two Jedis, just how they're jumping and running and they're fighting, holding on to like cables and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, so once we get through this list, I will name 3 that I think could be on anyone's order list and I would not argue with them.
Yeah. Now 4th on the list is, I don't know if it's my favorite lightsaber duel, but it's definitely one of them. It's Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader, round 2, on the second Death Star, where Luke finally cuts off Darth Vader's hand. And I love this because there's just so much emotion to it. Like, the second Darth Vader says that he's going to turn Luke's sister, and Luke just fucking just loses it and just goes right after Vader and just doesn't stop chop until the chopping's done. You know, and that choral music that's playing, it gets to me every time, and I love it.
And I like how he had to get angry to beat him. I think there's something with that in Star Wars where it's when they get really fucking mad that they win.
Right.
It's like they got to tap into that primal dark side to be victorious.
Anger is powerful.
Yeah.
Now, number 3 on the list is the last entry from this sequel trilogy. It is Rey and Kylo Ren versus the elite Praetorian guards. And yes, they do not have lightsabers, but they have melee weapons. Maybe this should have been a melee weapon list.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of a cool fight, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely the best fight from the sequel trilogy, and it was probably at the point in which I was most engrossed with what was going on in the sequel trilogy, if Rey and Kylo were going to join forces, and of course Kylo blows it. Number 2 on the list, the final entry from the original trilogy, it is Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader in Bespin round 1, and it's a long fight. And what I like about this fight is that Vader gets increasingly more annoyed with Luke Skywalker. Like, when they're in the carbon freezing chamber, he's like barely using like one hand, and he's just fucking with the kid. Then they get to the one area, and he's like throwing shit at him and launching him out the window. And by the time they get on that little like weather vane thing, he's just full on pissed at him, and he's like, "I'm just gonna fucking murder the kid now. I'm tired of trying to turn him." He's hacking at him.
He's throwing TVs at him, or whatever the fuck.
Luke gets like a lucky shot in his shoulder. He's like, "Motherfucker!" And he cuts the shit off, and he takes the hand. And for me, I don't think it, for me, while I agree it's probably number two, because, you know, I'm sure everyone has guessed what number one is. You know, this Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader fight is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And surprising absolutely nobody, the number one lightsaber in the Star Wars film universe is Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Maul. And I don't think I have to say anything about that, so I'm going to let Justin, because I know this is Justin's favorite Star Wars moment.
Yeah, I mean, when he disrobes and turns on both blades for his double-bladed lightsaber, when we saw that in the trailer, I was like, I didn't even know that was possible. That was just the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And so I was ready for it. I was pumped. And when he picks up the droid's head and smashes it with the force into the door panel, I was like, oh my God, this is just the coolest fucking thing ever. And the music's playing. I can't tell you how many days that summer that I just walked around going, na-na, 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 na-na. Oh, everywhere I went. I don't care if I was finding my fucking car keys. I turned it into an epic moment by playing that song in my head. And I can't thank that movie enough. As much as everyone shits on episode one, it literally has one of the greatest fights ever in the history of Star Wars. And I will take it any day of the week. And one of the best songs ever from Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think it was you, Justin, who pointed out to me a while ago that Darth Maul's not even temporarily concerned with Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, he's fighting both of them, but like he's fighting Qui-Gon, and Obi-Wan is just kind of in the way.
Right, he's just there taking up space. Yeah, no, it's pretty fucking great. I think that order is interesting. I would say back to the three fights, I would say, you know, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Maul is can be somebody's number one. I think the Luke versus Vader is also a good contender for number one, as well as Anakin versus Kenobi in episode three. I think any one of those three fights in any order is a correct list.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The one that's most...
Would you put Obi and Qui-Gon at number one, Randy?
I would put Obi-Wan and Anakin at number one. That's one that resonates with me the most. It's the most, like, emotional. Now, granted, it's highly... I mean, they're all unrealistic, but it's the most unrealistic, I think, probably of the bunch. But I love it, and the Battle of the Heroes theme that goes along with it is amazing too.
It's so good. I must have made Amy listen to that like a million times, and she's like, "I get it. It's good. Shut up."
Yeah, that's one. It's like da 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 da.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's just the one. And then, yeah, I love it. And then, like, halfway through, it turns into, like, Duel of Fates for a little while they're, like, on, like, the tight walk. And they're just like, oh, my God, can this get any better?
I don't like how the droids are just, like, doing their job. Like, it's, like, no big deal. Yeah. It's like, yeah, check out all this lava, man. We're going to be working OT tonight. This is great.
Yeah, it's the one, like, mining droid that, like, he flips on and lands on. And he's like, well, what's going on here? I'm just doing my job.
Yeah, I'm working here.
And that the whole thing with them like deactivating the shield when they're fighting is definitely a catch that on like second viewing. it makes a lot more sense why everything's getting fucked up, I guess. But
right,
I digress. But yeah, I agree with you, Justin. Like you, any of those three fights, if you told me that's your favorite fight, I would put both Vader and Luke Skywalker fights. You know, the one from Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back, Duel of the Fates, or Battle of the Heroes. I think any of those could be your number one, and I'd be like, yeah, that checks out.
Mm-hmm. I think that the only thing that throws me off on the Return of the Jedi fight is Vader isn't really doing much. You know, he's just kind of letting his lightsaber get hit by Luke a lot, and I don't think that they're actually fighting per se. I feel like Vader is like the horse in Never Ending Story. He's in the quicksand. He just kind of gives up. He's like,
his heart's just not in it.
Yeah, he's like, I don't really want to do this anymore. I'm good. So well, that would be my only qualm.
It kind of reminds me of a dad playing with his kid. You know, it's just like, I'll let him get himself tuckered out. You know,
yeah,
and the, you know, and then I'll spank him. You know,
yeah.
But it's definitely done. a valid criticism, because you know, like the Obi-Wan Qui-Gon Maul fight. Those are three fuckers trying to murder each other. Like, there's no, they're not trying to capture one of them to like turn them into light side. It's like this fight is only going to end with the death of the other person. And mm-hmm. Same thing with that Obi-Wan Anakin fight. Like, at that point, Obi-Wan has given up on trying to bring Anakin back into light. And he's like, all right, I guess I just got to fuck this guy up. And obviously Anakin's like, okay, I'm going to murder Kenobi. But it is definitely a wrinkle in it, you know, that at most points, we don't think that Vader's going to kill Luke, or we don't think that Luke's going to kill Vader. But
yeah, I do think it would have been cool if in episode 3, Anakin just, when Anakin's yelling at Obi-Wan, if Obi-Wan would have just force pushed his ass into the lava, it would have been a lot cooler.
Yeah, so uncivilized.
Like, he's like, yo, I hate you. And he's just, he's like, what was that? I can't hear you. Got a bunch of lava on your face, guy.
Yeah. Should have plugged your nose.
Hold your breath. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Qui-Gon Obi-Wan Maul fight ends with 67% of the participants being dead.
Right.
Well, I guess technically Maul doesn't get dead, I guess.
Yeah. As far as we knew. Yeah.
Well, exactly. You know, I'd go so far as to say 50% dead, because I'm pretty sure his lower half never comes back. That's only true, his upper half.
Why did they build all these stations with giant opening gaps of danger?
Giant pits of death. It's like, what purpose does this serve?
Yeah, we gotta stop with that.
It'll be really cool when people fight in it. But that is my list in honor of Star Wars Day. You know, when at my house, Star Wars Day is every day, but hopefully this list brought a smile to your face.
It did. All the whole time. There were a couple of questionable ones on there, but that's okay.
Well, they ranked them all.
Yeah. And I guess it is fair to take out the Rogue One scene, because that is one of the all-time greatest moments in the history of Star Wars for me. But you're right. He is sort of the lone swordsman in that one.
And it's
definitely not a fight.
Yeah, it's a slaughter. And the only melee weapons you could say that the Rebels have against them is their own bones.
Yeah, they got to put up their dukes and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And their best ain't going to cut it.
No,
sir.
Man, when he lifts the guy up and then cuts him in half and walk as he's walking underneath him, that's just mean, man.
Yeah, the indignity.
It's like, he doesn't do that to anybody else, just that one guy. It's like, oh, man.
It's like, fuck you in particular.
Yeah, it's like when you get called on in class and you didn't want to. You made eye contact, and then it backfired.
This fucking door won't open.
Anyway. All right. Well, do you guys have anything else to add? Is that it? Is that our show?
That's it.
All right. Thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode and Star Wars-filled episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Again, this is episode
346.
Oh, my God. 346. Fantastic. Thank you, Rand. Appreciate that. You keep rocking and rolling. Be sure to check out the other podcasts. Of course, we have the Pixelated Podcast and the Don't Be Crazy Podcast. In the meantime, be sure to check out the Escape Pod if you want to keep up with our viewing pleasure of Star Trek The Next Generation. It's a lot of fun. We're at, I believe we're at 3 yays and 6 nays is what the current score is.
Yep, so that's going to change today.
It will definitely change today. Yes. It will be in addition to one of those two numbers.
Fantastic. I cannot wait. So thank you for listening to that. And you stay safe, and you keep rocking and rolling, baby. Thank you so much.